everyone, and welcome back to the Research Talks here from Stopbox with Alan Green and Dan Flynn. So, I'm in Panama at the Swiss Mining Institute. It's been a very good vibe, actually, I would say. There's lots of capital ready and excited to go. I think I was getting a sense, actually, that, and we'll talk about this, I know, and there's been some news that I've not really been keeping tabs on, but I know you two have, of course, with the Iran-US situation and the Strait of Hormuz, because, of course, I left the March conference only a few weeks ago, and that kind of bullish sentiment I picked up from November was definitely dampened little bit by the situation. But the sense I'm getting now is actually that shock maybe has moved on and people aren't really concerned. And again, that bull case is still very much intact. So the vibe I'm getting here is very good, actually. Again, it's a very good vibe. So I'm back all excited about the sector. And everyone else is here too. So I'll take that as a very good positive sign for everyone involved in this space. But I've not been able to keep track of the London markets. I wake up and it's about an hour left until they're closing. So keeping track of it. But Alan, what's been going on?
It's been a crazy week. Dan and I were talking about it before you came on air. The Strait of Hormuz have this afternoon been opened. This is, of course, Friday afternoon as we're talking. And the Iranian minister has declared the straits will have reopened and they will stay open, according to a ceasefire accord that was agreed in Lebanon. Of course, we know how volatile and fast-changing everything is over there. But, of course, the prices have reacted predictably. Oil stocks have fallen like a stone. Everything else has leapt. And food companies, financials, the whole shebang. So, yeah, great. We go into the weekend. What's going to happen on Monday? Who knows? But it certainly makes for an interesting ride. But certainly lots of news at the small cap end too, which I'll come on to in a second.
And Dan, what have you been seeing from your radar this week?
Yeah, much the same as Alan, to be honest. I was thinking about what we were going to talk about at the top of this earlier today, and in the last couple of hours, it's just changed completely. So with the Strait opening up, gold had been relatively flat on the week, and now that's up, as is silver. And the outperformer at the moment is Bitcoin, which is, as we speak, above, I think it's like around 78K, which is past the resistance zone. So if it holds that, then we could, see it move a lot higher from here, which will obviously be good news for all the long-suffering treasury companies, of which I'm a holder of a couple. Like Alan says, though, next week, who knows what's going to happen? The US market had already hit record highs before there was even a solution. And I use the term solution to this conflict tentatively because, again, like you don't know what's going to happen over the weekend. It turns on a dime at the moment. So I don't want to be cynical and too miserable, but I am cautiously optimistic watching the market madness with maybe just a bit of caution before we get too ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I think that actually mirrors the sense I'm getting here is that the sort of that fear, if you like, and that concern is perhaps going away a little bit. The excitement is coming back. That's really great to hear. That's what's been going on with the commodities and the markets this week. So, Dan, you want to start us off by talking about Delta Gold Technologies, of course, the quantum computing with nano gold play, which I believe has been doing quite well recently.
Absolutely. Yeah, I wanted to come back to Delta today. Now, I'm happy to acknowledge that this is a company I've covered quite a lot on the podcast already, but I think it's fair to say it's warranted. This was one of my picks for the year back in December. I hold shares, and since we last spoke about it in Feb, early March, the share price has just kept moving higher. It's now trading around 87p, which puts it on a market cap of roughly 56 million. That's nearly double where it was the last time I covered it. So clearly there's momentum there. And this week, I actually spoke to CEO Michael Jones for the first time following the latest update from the company, which I think gives a useful indication of where things are headed next. So I won't go too deep into the core technology again, because we have covered that quite a lot already. But at a high level, Delta is working on gold-based nanomaterials for quantum computing with the aim of developing materials that could help support more stable and scalable qubits. And that's really the key point. If quantum computing is going to scale, then improving how qubits behave in terms of stability, coherence, and control is absolutely critical. Delta's strategy is to build IP around that opportunity. Now, the way it's doing that is through research partnerships with the University of Toronto and Penn State University so far. And these agreements really sit at the center of the investment case because they give Delta access to exclusive rights to resulting IP from the research programs in exchange for funding. So this isn't just a vague bet on quantum. It's a very deliberate strategy to build a proprietary IP portfolio through, you know, top tier academic research and then protect and monetize that IP over time. And that's where the broader structure comes in. We've now got these two key agreements in place with Toronto and Penn State. And together they form the basis of what Delta is describing as a kind of center of excellence model, with the idea being to connect leading academic teams, develop new innovations, and ensure Delta sits at the center of that ecosystem with ownership or control of the IP that comes out of it, while actively looking to add more institutions as it goes along. And that's where the latest update fits in. So the company has appointed Haynes Boone as its global IP council, which on the surface sounds perhaps like a bit of a boring announcement. But when you think about what Delta is trying to build, it actually makes a lot of sense because this is about putting the right legal framework in place to protect and structure that IP portfolio as it begins to develop. And when I spoke to Michael, that was very much the emphasis here. This is about building things properly from the ground up so that if and when valuable IP starts to emerge, it can be protected, it can be licensed, and it can ultimately be monetized effectively. So at the same time, it's worth acknowledging just how far the stock has already come. At the time of writing, it was up around 730% since its IPO in December. It's probably a little bit more than that now because it has risen since I was looking earlier. And that's a huge move. And it would be unrealistic to expect that kind of performance to continue in a straight line. We all know that. We've already seen moments where early investors have taken some profits, and that's completely normal after a run like this. So there may well be periods of consolidation or pullbacks along the way. But stepping back, what's interesting to me is that despite that share price performance, the underlying story is still actually at a very early stage. I mean, the current valuation is being built on a small number of academic partnerships, a developing IP strategy, and the plan to expand that into something larger. We haven't yet seen a significant portfolio of granted patents, major institutional involvement, although that's building, or, you know, broad participation from US investors, with the company recently launching on the OTC. The volume's still quite thin there, though. So that's where the next phase of the story likely sits, because if the company does begin to deliver on those fronts, then it's not hard to see how the market could start to look at it very differently, particularly when you consider that companies operating in similar areas can trade at valuations in the hundreds of millions or even billions of dollars. And of course, there's also that, you know, longer term, perhaps possibility of a larger player stepping in for a large buyout at some point. Of course, none of that's guaranteed. This is still effectively a speculative story and execution risk is pretty high. What I would say, though, is you speak to Michael Jones, you do get a sense that there's a clear plan here and a good understanding of how to build this step by step. So for me, the case for holding, for now at least, remains intact at this stage. I'm happy to stay in on the basis that if the company continues to deliver, there is still a credible path to further upside from here. If we do see periods of weakness along the way, then those could well present interesting opportunities to get exposure, attractive entry points. And you'd be getting exposure to what remains a very early stage, but potentially very significant story. So yeah, feeling good about this one, Mark.
Well, I think you're right, aren't you? It is still early stage, isn't it? So it's only just, they use the tech term, the flywheel is not even really turning yet. So it's good to see that because, of course, they are on Aquis, but they've got their dual listing on the lower OTC markets. I think the plan is to keep going up those ranks, if you like, and then potentially follow in the steps of Guardian, I believe, and go for a NASDAQ or a New York Stock Exchange, so a main listing over in the US. And just from being here, and of course I'm dealing a bit more around, I should say, a bit more North American investors rather than European ones, and it's a different ball game here in terms of the capital that's available and the money, the numbers that they talk. So it's such a huge market, and Delta, I think, are very well positioned in what is a pretty exciting space in the right markets at the right time. So yeah, I'm glad to see them doing quite well.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, I mean, they are sort of tilting towards the US alongside the UK. And that's the place to be for quantum, isn't it? There's more money. I think that the investors get the story a bit more. So it's already doing really well on the basis of its UK position. So yeah, the US side could change the game.
Absolutely. Good. Thank you, Dan. So, Alan, you've got a couple of heliums you want to talk to us about. So you've got Quantum and Mendel that you're going to update us on.
Quantum and Mendel. Yes, continuing the theme of quantum there, Dan. Certainly, starting with Quantum Helium, I mean, the company have metaphorically and literally taken a quantum leap today in terms of moving their projects forward and also the financial structure of the company, but I'll come to that in a second. Just a quick bit of background on Quantum. Former Mosman Oil and Gas, of course. The company has royalty projects in Australia, and it just earns it will earn royalties when those come to fruition. But it owns the Sagebrush and Coyote Wash flagship projects in Colorado, which are above the famous Leadville formation, which is host to a number of companies running wells and other projects. Now, the company infrastructure is cornerstoned by the Sagebrush 1 oil well, which supports operations and developments. And in the full year to December 31st, 25, generated revenues of 322,800 Australian dollars. Obviously provides some support for ongoing operations. But of course, the company is very much focused, having employed energy consultant Sproul to examine its holdings and assets at Coyote Wash and Sagebrush in detail. Sproul has independently validated that there is over 1 billion cubic feet of helium prospects across both projects. Coyote Wash is the biggest one with 0.97 billion cubic feet. But of course, with Sagebrush, you already have the Sagebrush 1 well drilled, so that makes access to those fields of helium far easier. So the company has been working with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Utah Mountain Tribe to obtain permissions to operate the Sagebrush well and to conduct extended testing of the Sagebrush well for helium and gas prospecting. That is now very much underway. And the company announced on Thursday this week, that's the 16th of April, that extended production test program was progressing well, operations in line with plan. And next week, they plan to perforate the Leadville lower section. And that work will target the primary helium-bearing interval within the Leadville. So this is very much a threshold moment for Quantum Helium as a company. Other milestones are progressing well, cementing casing integrity. All of that is underway. And the testing program is designed to test flow rates and confirm historical helium concentrations of 2.76%. So Quantum Helium is a company with proven assets, and it is it's going through the steps needed at the moment to tap into those assets, and obviously with that global backdrop to bring commercial helium to market. So the company announced this morning that it had raised a huge sum of money, and this is why I refer to the Quantum Leap. The company's market capitalization, the shares currently trade at 0.3p, which gives it a market cap of 13.4 million. The shares are trading at 0.45p yesterday, but the company's raised 5 million quid. That's well over one third of the market cap of the company. That's a huge amount of money. It's going to see the company through well into next year. It's going to cover all the operations. And it's raised at a time when you have this backdrop of a global helium shortage. And also, of course, the company is about to take these crucial steps in proving up the helium that's in the Leadville formation. And we'll have that news next week. Now, We published this morning with the company. I also put some comments out on social media, and you know, I received some fairly abusive stuff back for that. And I just think shareholders have got to see the bigger picture here. If you look at the helium market at the moment, you look at the listed companies, particularly the London ones that are listed in this sector. You've got Pulsar Helium, Helium One, and Helix Exploration. Now, the lowest market cap there is, I think, 67 million quid. Quantum, with a proven asset, is worth 13.5 million quid. It's just raised 5 million quid. So if everything goes to plan next week, and there's no reason to think that it won't, given the work that Sproul did, then we're going to be seeing literally a sea change in this company's valuation. And I think, maybe multi-bag is too strong a term, but I would expect to see significant movement to start to close that valuation gap. So I think shareholders that may be bought a little higher and are a little disgruntled need to consider the bigger picture, and also consider the global backdrop and how long this helium shortage is likely to last, because that the Qatari helium production facility will take a long time to restart. You don't just shut those things down overnight. So it's important to understand that. And also, continuing this helium theme, I want to look at Mendel Helium too, because again, in terms of valuation gap, taking the factors I've just outlined, Mendel Helium is even further behind the curve. Mendel is currently trading at 6.6p, has a market capitalization of just under 10 million. Now, what's interesting about Mendel? Mendel's listed on Aquis, so it's at highs at the moment. But Nick Tulloch, who unfortunately broke his ankle and is currently recovering in hospital, and he has a Mendel orange-coloured plaster on his leg as we speak. We wish you all the best, Nick. Get well soon. But he's had his foot metaphorically and literally on the accelerator to drive the projects in Kansas forward. The focus there, of course, is the Rostwell, and the Rostwell is now producing helium, as we know. The company has raised money to, and this is a lot of the money was raised from a private investor group called Rixborough Resources, and this company or group of investors have basically backed the individual well. They've invested directly into the well rather than the company having to raise money and obviously create some dilution. But nonetheless, that's not an issue for a company that's producing helium potentially at the rate that Mendel will do. So we have Ross 2. Now, Ross has been drilled to its full 5,500 feet. The decision to drill that well has been absolutely vindicated. The spectrometer has identified helium with low hydrocarbon signatures in several major zones. The well will be perforated within the next 10 days. And on the back of this success, they're seeing huge amounts of interest from regional operators and companies with other assets. They have signed an agreement with a company called Ritchie Exploration to develop the Schneeweis. It's spelled S-C-H-N-E-W-E-I-S, but it's pronounced Schneeweis. The Schneeweis Ventures well, which is approximately 4 kilometers away from Ross, so it's well within the same zone. And Rixford have come in to provide backing for each well that the company will drill. And I know, Dan, you've conducted an interview with Nick Tulloch, and Nick has outlined the developments that are taking place there and the pace of developments, which I think has caught everyone by surprise. And, of course, the latest news today is that Mendel have signed a proposal with a leading helium producer to install equipment to sell or recover and sell helium at its Rost well and the nearby Rost twin well. Not only will Mendel be able to produce and sell helium from those two wells, it will also in future be able to pipe in helium from other wells. Now, that will have the facility will have the capability to produce 1 million cubic feet of raw gas every day with 5% helium content. So that equates to around 500,000 cubic feet per day of helium based on Ross's gas composition. Of course, that doesn't include the composition from Ross 2 or the other wells that will pump gas in. So this is, again, further evidence of Nick having his foot on the accelerator. The company is also planning to move to AIM. Work is underway there. That will take place very soon. But again, we have this huge valuation gap. You've got companies that have these helium assets that are prioritizing, throwing everything at them to get that helium to market as soon as possible. And certainly Mendel and Quantum Helium are two companies that are at the forefront of this action. But as of yet, the market capitalization doesn't reflect their progress. I expect to see these valuation gaps close very soon. And I think particularly with Mendel, which is further down the valuation curve than Quantum Helium, I think we're going to see some major moves in the coming weeks.
Good. Excellent. Good stuff, Alan. So, you're all about helium today, aren't you?
Indeed. Yes. Yes. That's probably why my voice is a little high pitched as well.
Okay. Yeah. No, but it's nice though, isn't it? It's a shame about Nick hurting himself. I hadn't heard that. It does sound very unpleasant. I hope he recovers from that as soon as he can. Okay, good. But it's still good to see progress there. I guess he won't be getting out on site for a little while, but anyway, thank you, Alan, for talking to us about those two helium plates.
Thank you, Mark.
Good. So, Dan, back to you. A bit something new today. 49 Metals, who I think you spoke to this week.
Yeah, that's right. I spoke to them on Monday, and the interview's up if anyone wants to check it out. So, the 49 Metals fresh IPO in Australia has just come to market. And what's interesting here is that it hasn't come on quietly to go and figure things out, as is often the case. It's come on with cash in the bank and drilling already underway. At the time of recording, the company is sitting on a market cap of around 14 million Aussie dollars. So still very early stage from a valuation perspective. And having spoken to CEO Phil Carter, you get the sense this is very much about moving quickly and trying to generate results that can drive a re-rate in the near term. So starting with the asset base, and everything really centers around Nevada, specifically the Walker Lane Belt. As we all know, this is one of the most prolific gold jurisdictions in the world, home to multiple past producing mines and major discoveries, many active mines. So from a jurisdiction point of view, the company's in exactly the right place. And within that, the key focus right now is the Tonopah project area, and specifically a target called Gold Mountain. This is where the company is currently drilling with a program of up to 8,000 meters. And importantly, this drilling started right around the time of listing. So this is not a we'll get going in 6 months sort of story. This is drills turning immediately. Geologically, Gold Mountain is being explored as an epithermal gold-silver system, which is the kind of system that can host both broader zones of lower-grade mineralization and also high-grade vein structures. And that's exactly what the company's already seeing here. There is already evidence of gold-bearing quartz veins with a lower-grade halo around them, with historic drill results including 53.3 meters at 1.2 grams a ton gold from 29 meters. So nice and accessible. And the current drilling is really about understanding the orientation of those structures, their continuity, and whether they can define something of meaningful scale. So the company will be testing new targets generated from geophysics and field mapping, following up on historical drilling intersections, and assessing the scale and continuity of mineralization across the system. Phil also pointed to the presence of pyrite associated with IP anomalies, which is encouraging because in systems like this, pyrite can often act as a pathfinder for gold. So again, the company's not just drilling blind. There's already a geological model in place here, and now it's about testing and refining it. There's also a useful comparison nearby with the Hasbrock. I've probably pronounced that wrong, but the Hasbrock deposit. Historically, Gold Mountain has been shown to host a non-JORC foreign resource of around 460,000 ounces, and is thought to be broadly similar in style to Hasbrock, which is a low-grade oxide gold system. But interestingly, Phil made the point that 49 metals could actually be sitting deeper within the system, which opens up the potential for those higher grade zones rather than just a repeat of a near surface oxide deposit. Although that near surface oxide deposit at the other project is huge, so that alone is great. So that adds a bit more upside to the exploration case. Now, in terms of timing, the company is already well into the drilling program and is expecting results in roughly 6 to 8 weeks. So again, this is near-term news flow. And importantly, the project sits on patented ground, which helps streamline permitting and allows it to move forward more quickly than you might otherwise expect from a project on ground where there's perhaps more permits required for each stage of development and exploration. So beyond Gold Mountain, there are two other projects worth mentioning. The first is Sinter, which is earlier stage, but has already returned rock chip samples up to around 19 grams a ton gold. Here, the plan is to carry out further mapping, sampling, geophysics, and the goal is to move towards drilling once targets are refined. And there's also Buffalo Canyon, which is a slightly different style of system. This looks to be more of an intrusion-related gold target. There's evidence of broad mineralization, basically from surface, and potential for a large-scale, lower-grade system, underlying that. So while Gold Mountain is the immediate focus, there is a broader pipeline of meaningful targets behind it. Stepping back, I think what's interesting here is how this is set up from a market perspective. You've got a company that's got cash from the IPO, it's drilling already. Share structure is pretty tight with around 82 million in issue. I think anything below 100 million at expiration is pretty good, and that's quite significantly below that. And also a meaningful portion of that already tight structure is held by management and institutional investors. So if drilling does deliver, there's a scenario there where the stock could move pretty quickly. And that's really the key point. This is very much a ground floor opportunity, but not one where you're waiting around endlessly for something to happen, with drilling being promised and being pushed back and pushed back. It's underway. We already know what the catalysts are: drill results from Gold Mountain, followed by further work across the wider portfolio. So, of course, this is exploration. There's no guarantees of success. We all know that, but I always feel like I should say it. But with the company already drilling, fully funded for that program, and operating in a tier one jurisdiction, it feels like one that's definitely worth keeping on the radar as those results start to come through. Because, yeah, if Gold Mountain starts to deliver from a starting point of around 14 million Aussie dollars, this could be one that moves quickly from here. So looking forward to speaking to the company more moving forward, hopefully, at least around those drill results, because I think that could be very interesting.
It's an exploration play, right? That's got some near-term catalysts with the drill results. So that's what we're looking at here in a nutshell, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But it's in a Nevada. I mean, where could be better to explore? It's zoned down on the underexplored bit of Nevada, perhaps. So I think, this isn't just an entirely unproven area. It's somewhere where we know all the infrastructure's in place. We know that people like to invest in projects in Nevada. They've got everything's looking a bit quite encouraging already, and yeah, we're just waiting for that news blow.
Good, excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much. That's nice to get. We've got a few good ones to think about and talk about. So thank you both. So yeah, we'll have to see what next week brings. It'll probably be all different again, but hopefully for the better.
Yes, hopefully.
Let's hope. Yeah.
We'll see.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. Okay, well, thank you both for that. Enjoy your weekends, and we'll speak next week.
Thanks, both.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
If you enjoyed this interview, then give us a thumbs up, a like, or a retweet. Subscribe to us on YouTube or follow us on Twitter, and hit that notification bell to be the first to know when we release new content. There's loads of great content on our website too, across all our programs at stockboxmedia.com. Thank you for watching.